Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy.
It's gonna get better before it all gets worse. Do the pictures, paint the buttons you think we all deserve. It's gonna get
having a diagnosis change is a tough slog. Just when you thought you had one mental health condition under control, you're given a new label and need to adapt. New Jersey singer-songwriter Sammy Kaye, most recently of the punk supergroup The Kilograms, has had more diagnoses than he can count on one hand. His most recent is schizoaffective. But the name of his condition is not his focus. It's about managing his symptoms, which include hearing the voices of a number of characters or parts inside his head. Instead of being tied to a certain label, Sammy is curious about the journey he's on. He's eager to learn the best ways to cope and maintain stability. And he's optimistic about what he calls the evolution of his mental health.
Staying out late, underneath the neon lights, down on Decatur, just trying to get right. Honey, I know it's gonna get better before it all gets worse. Do the pictures, paint the bodies you think we all deserve.
My name is Sammy Kaye. I was born and raised in the great state of New Jersey. I stumbled on punk rock when I was about 6 years old, 7 years old, via my father, accidentally. And I discovered it a couple years later, and I knew that that was my thing. About the same time I discovered punk rock, I realized that I was not, quote unquote, normal. My brain was wired a little different. I noticed that my friends' brains weren't wired the same as well. And that made me start to realize the mental health journey that I inevitably would be traveling on for the next almost 30 years. My mental health is a weird beast. It's constantly evolved since I recognized it. What started out as anxiety and depression turned into bipolar with codependency for substance and inevitably led me to sober up when I was 24. And while that journey was happening, I realized that my mind had evolved more, and that shifted towards a borderline personality disorder diagnosis. And that ultimately evolved / we realized that there was more to my mind than that. A couple years back, we realized that it was schizoaffective disorder, And the current journey with it now is that we're trying to figure out if that evolved again. It's a crazy journey, but that's been the last 25 years of my life, rock and roll and trying to stay alive.
That sounds like a lot, having so many diagnoses and parsing that out. Like, I know for me, a bipolar diagnosis was quite clear based on things that are going on in my life and my symptoms, but then ADHD was thrown into the mix. It's like, well, how do I know which is which? And is this thing that I'm experiencing now the bipolar? And so to have all those different diagnoses over the years and for them to change, how has that been?
It's been a journey. A lot of the things have gone hand in hand. The bipolar, once I started to understand the triggers and whatnot, and I was 25 or 26 when that started to kind of click, we realized that it had a lot of the borderline tendencies, and we navigated that and went through the book and tried to figure it out. And at that point, I was also sober and working a 12-step program as well. And we realized that a lot of the triggers and trauma that I have push it more towards borderline. And then there's always a little hand in hand of it's common, at least that's what the doc said, that voices will exist. And there was always voices in my head, but they weren't prevalent. And it just kind of evolved that, like, the juggling of the diagnoses has been honestly easy, but understanding the evolution and trying to figure out where it's going to go next has been ultimately the journey, like the struggle within that.
Evolution is a great word because it does reflect the positivity and knowing that things are going to change. And I think a lot of folks that get into mental health struggles and crises feel like they might be stuck. They may not be able to go anywhere from there. And I know I felt that way for a long time with depression when I was first coming out of the hospital. And
yeah.
So that evolution or to evolve, it's a cool way of framing it.
Yeah. It's the best way that I've been able to process it is that as I grow as an individual, my mind has grown either stronger or weaker, depending on how you want to look at it. I prefer to try and keep the positive route that it's evolving as I'm evolving. Maybe not for the best, but it's kind of what it is.
So we haven't really talked about voices in the head too much on the podcast over the years. And of course, the doctors have this thing called auditory hallucinations, which I don't know if that fits for you or not.
That's actually what, in the last year, it's the first time that there's been auditory hallucinations where they've projected out. It's been all right and tame. I definitely have learned my triggers. I know when they're coming. Like, I can feel it. My partner and I try to squash it or do the thing as best we can while understanding that there's no way to stop them. When they come and you ride the wave.
So what does that look like when you have those, would you call them like outbursts or when these voices that you have are coming out?
It depends. Sometimes they just happen and that's unfortunately life. But for the most part, I tend to sequester and medicate. I don't take any prescribed medicine at this point, which is the big struggle because all the stuff they have given me in the past has essentially turned me into a zombie or taken away the creative side of me, which is really who I am, this weirdo art nerd, writer, whatever. So we'll medicate. If I know it's coming, I'll like maybe double down on some Benadryl, which by no means I don't suggest this to anybody at all. This is not, I'm not a doctor. I just know that those meds didn't work equally for me to be who I am and also to be able to control. It was one or the other. And that was a long journey with that too. It wasn't like an overnight decision. I tend to sequester. I'll take a ride and listen to records. And in that ride, just kind of let it out, let the auditory happen. I find myself talking to myself on the regular in the car by myself. I try to keep it in check. There's a kid in the house too. I don't necessarily want them to see me rambling. Like, there's about 7 characters in my mind that come and go. There's definitely a snap between the militant one and the let's go get ice cream like the child in me, you know?
Yeah.
It's very much a light switch that, which I understand between my partner and the kid, that that's a pain in the ass.
In dissociative identity, they talk about parts or a system. So these parts that you have, do you present those to other people? Other than...
No, I've gone through them with the doc, which is real cool. And it was dissociative. And then once they started to present, that's when it switched to schizoaffective. We've gone through a lot of songs I've written, a lot of the art I've created, to see what voices are there, which is really cool. And that's how I really understood there's these different facets of voices in my head. That's how I really understood it, was we tore through the catalog, everything I've written, everything I was writing, in regards to the feelings in the writings that I would necessarily know, but the listener wouldn't know. That's how we sort of figured out there was like this militant guy that I call the general, and there was a kid. There's definitely a voice in my head that's the addictive tick. It's kind of always telling me to grab a drink, go get high. There's a preacher. There's a voice that I refer to as the preacher that, like, you know, we can be the best we can be, do the thing. You know, they're all facets of what I present every day.
Yeah.
Liz asked me today what I want to do for dinner. The kiddo's on a school trip till 8 o'clock. And I'm like, having a full conversation about, like, all right, are we getting meatball parms tonight? Are we going to the deli? Like, pizza, Chinese food? Like, what's in the fridge? Can we kill the fridge, you know? There's definitely been a journey in understanding that. And even now, like, when I'm writing, I'll just let them rip, which is really cool. Like,
yeah,
I'll let these people tell their side of the story.
Do you have an example of a song that you could dissect a little bit?
The whole record of Civil War was unintentionally written this way, and that's what it became. Cecilia is a facet of my mind, and I knew something that was wacky, and the song Sweet Cecilia ultimately led to her ODing. It's a conversation of her at a bar and somebody being like, you good? And then the chorus was written in the bartender's perspective, like, hey, come on, Cecilia. And then I wrote a couple months later, Better Worse, that was intended to be her funeral. And after that, I didn't hear that voice for a long time. And then when I started to write July 1960, I was in the shower and I was doing this free write thing where I just kind of disassociate and just put my phone in memos and just play three chords and just ramble. There was a line that came out in a better way. And that was, it's so damn hard to hide behind these scars. She said, it's so damn hard.
It's so damn hard to hide behind these scars. And she will. It's so damn hard to hide behind these scars.
And I realized that it was Cecilia's voice trying to say something. And I just kind of free sung in the shower, got out, touched a guitar, and let her go, let her rip. And it was essentially her telling me, like, I'm not good, but I'm not dead, but I'm here, kind of rolling with it. And if you look at the songs, it's like, tell me about your life, you know, before you numb yourself. Like, are you good? The next one is like talking about a funeral. It's going to get better before it all gets worse. The idea of recovery these days, if I lose somebody from addiction, it's a sad thing, but a lot of them that I'm losing are in real deep. That might be the better moment before the sorrow really sets in. Like, it never got easy. You know, she only wants a better way. That's it. That weird kind of story arc. But she's been in songs bobbing and weaving for like the better part of 10 years.
What was it like to look at that record with your doctor and realize
it was cool? it was a cool wake up just to get an understanding of like who's there and to be able to recognize when this voice shows up, that's maybe not a good sign. Or when things get noisier and they're going at it, you can not lean on certain voices, but try and shut certain ones out.
Yeah.
But obviously with addiction, there's always a tick, even years and years in. And for me, it's not going straight to dope or pills. It's like, have a beer.
Yeah.
Because that voice knows one beer is just going to snowball to that in 48 hours, you know?
Yeah, the gateway for sure.
Yeah, like for me, it's never the first. It's not being able to stop.
So with having all these labels put on you over the years and changing, like you said, evolving, how has that affected your music journey? Like as far as being able to go on tour and put out records, has there been some real low patches or has it been?
Yeah. I think so. I think a lot of dudes came and went in the band because there were just some rocky tours. And a lot of my triggers have to do with being at the lowest point. Like money is a huge trigger for me and a huge stressor, making sure the bills are paid, making sure everybody's taken care of. So if it's a bad tour and I'm struggling and the shows aren't great, they can feel it. I can feel it. We all can feel it. And for the most part, like the boys now, like the KGs and the Sammy Band are all, you know, everybody kind of gets it now, currently. And even like the KGs have been so goddamn supportive in the sense of like, we're a fairly new band, but like we have a buddy of ours essentially tour managing so that there's stress off my back, that I can just focus on what's at home, my partner being sick, and the kiddo struggling with some gastro issues, and be able to be present here, even though we're away, be able to focus on just essentially playing music. Yeah. And the budget, kind of my on the road duties, is just making sure we're good and making sure we know what kind of money we have and putting on a good show.
So when you're on the road, I imagine you don't have as much personal time or time to yourself to be able to process things. So how does that affect things? I mean, do you find that being out there, you might even push things aside with mental health?
I find that it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's a roll of the dice. We had a tour where we pulled out of town and immediately like the tires blew and it's like, that's the budget. Tow truck, whole nine, tire repair. The tours these days have been easy. If I'm gone for less than 5 days, it's not a tour. And that's pretty much all we do. We dipped out for 10 days or 11 days, but we were in a studio for 3 days, 5 days. Or we did a weekend, went to the studio and then did a festival where like our families all came. For me these days, these little short bursts we're doing are really beneficial because it's like my partner's got cancer and the little weekenders are kind of my relief from being the caretaker. And she's good and she's kicking butt. Chemo knocks her out. But like the hand that we've been dealt is that every time I go away, something, the schedule changes. Like I've never gone away since she got diagnosed with cancer where they didn't have a procedure or something last minute scheduled the day I left or the day after I left. Every chemo shot has been different. Radiation, nothing's been steady besides she's going to throw up. Sometimes she's like golden for 36 hours and sometimes she's out for 36 hours. Everyone is hit differently. That the stress at home from traveling has been making sure that Liz is solid and the kiddo's solid. Whether if mom's down, Noe has somebody here just to make sure.
What's been the toughest thing about staying stable over the years and times where you felt like you were doing good and doing okay? What's been the hardest thing?
The hardest thing about everything I deal with sobriety and my mental health is that they're not friends. And there's a certain uncontrollable light switch between the borderline, the schizo affective, the addictions. I sobered up in 2014. I started like HIT meetings in 2015. And then I started working a program in like 2016. I'll have these brownouts and I'll be good for 4 years and I'll wake up hungover. I had one last year. We went to the movies. I went and saw Willy Wonka, me and Liz, and we had a killer date. And then all of a sudden the next morning I was hungover and my truck wasn't in the driveway. Zero recollection. That something will flip in my head and the next thing I know, it's the next day or 2 days later. And she's like, you know what happened? I'm like, no. And that's been the biggest struggle, really, is these brownouts. And they've been happening. I realized they happened as a kid too. I would get in bar fights or whatever, like when I was drinking, where it was like, with love, like I don't fight people to fight people. Like if I hear you say something about somebody that isn't a white hetero male, I'm going to say something. If I see you being partner in a bar, I'll throw you across the street. I used to take pride in fighting for sport, hunting for sport, especially post Trump. And I'm like 33, like actively, like, oh, you said something racist? I'm going to break your nose. Sorry, bud. But I'll have like full recollection of it. And years ago, I wouldn't. But the brownouts definitely are the biggest, I think, struggle.
How do you manage the voices? Is there some housekeeping to do with that? Are you herding cats almost sometimes?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely that. It's definitely keeping my house in order is really keeping like triggers at bay, keeping up to a program, trying to make sure I'm at my meetings, trying to vocalize to my partner like, yo, I'm not feeling great. This has been bothering me. Or letting them out when I can, letting them do their thing if it's a safe way to do it. It's definitely the best way I've found to be able to like keep it at bay. Is like, you want to talk? I'm feeling good. Talk. Do your thing. The auditory doesn't happen unless I'm like beyond stressed and in crisis of some form, which sucks because a lot of the last 8 months has been just kind of crisis after crisis.
Yeah.
One of my friends in the program that's got 30 something years, I talk to him every couple of days and he's like, dude, like that would drive a man insane if they weren't going through sobriety or having even an anxiety diagnosis, just a generalized anxiety, like that would kill that person. Like they would crush. They would crush from the weight. And I appreciate him because he kind of gives me a lot of grace and support for realizing that like a preteen with gastro issues that's been in and out of the hospital for 3 months, a partner with cancer going through different treatments, me navigating how to keep a roof over our heads, trying to budget one salary within reason. I got to take a lot of days off to take care of what's going on. Just the weight of that is a lot. So I just try to ultimately let them fly when I can. Like I had the house to myself yesterday. Like I wrote a song, which I hadn't done in a minute. I like had full conversations with myself willingly. I let them loose. I was folding laundry and straight up talking to myself and I'm laughing about it, but I let them go. I let them do their thing. I knew I was in a safe space. I knew where the bottle of Benadryl was if it was going bad. And I got my data.
So just let it go. Yeah.
was my conversation with Sammy K. SammyKNJ.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to ScreenTherapyHQ.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to ScreenTherapyHQ.com. For merch, check out Scream Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting, it's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Scream Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Scream Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Clahoman Nation. Contact me at ScreenTherapyHQ.com or email me at ScreenTherapyPodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
933 CFMU, redefining radio in your community. Looking to support us further? Look no further. Go to cfmu.ca/fundraising to learn more.
You're listening to Oncle Jazz.
Hello, and welcome to 93.3 CFMU, redefining radio in your community. You just heard Oncle Jazz by Men I Trust. My name's Lily.
I'm Maya Ruth.
And we're going to be taking you through some new releases for the next hour. First up, we have Talking Violet.
These next songs come from Everything at Once, Talking Violet's second full-length studio album. Recorded in the summer of 2023, the album's themes reflect on changes in friendship, loss, and the pursuit to create space. This is Everything at Once by Talking Violet. Disposition.